The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We are pleased to have on with us this morning, I think one of the brightest people that exists in the market. In fact, he was ranked by Nielsen's as the number one most read investor columnist on the web. We have Mr. Jim Jubak. He's been writing about the capital markets for 25 years, and he has Jubak Picks, by the way. If you want to find out about Jim, go to www.jubak, that's J-U-B-A-K, picks.com. And so we're going to bring right on now Mr. Jim Jubak. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Had a little school emergency this morning. Sorry to be running late.
Oh, that's okay. little school emergency. I talked about it in one of my opening comments that there was a report out by MIT that talked about why markets go down when people return from vacations. And one of them is that they're coming back and they've been away and they come back and they got to get the kids in school and then they have to address all the bad news that they've missed while they were gone. So I want to talk to you about the bad news from last week. What do you think about this oil situation? Do you think we're going to last? Do you think it's going to stay down here for a while? Do you have any opinion on this?
Sure, lots of opinions. I think we're going to move lower in oil. It's like we're sort of at the denial of reality on OPEC's part. I guess to finish the week, the last day of last week's decline came as OPEC made it clear that it wasn't going to cut production. They keep saying, we're okay with $40 a barrel oil, and the market is going to say, okay, at some point, let's see whether you really mean that. But, they didn't cut their quotas. They, in fact, are outproducing their quotas, and the world has got too much oil. So we'll test the price.
And so we got a little bit lower to go. And then long term, though, do you think we had a John Huffmeyer on last week, the former uh-huh. president of Shell Oil, and John says that he thought that within 6 months we'd be back to $80 in oil, which I thought was pretty optimistic. Boone Pickens, I think, is picking a year. Do you think this will be a quick dip, or is this going to be long?
I'd go longer than 6 months. But what you're seeing is. As people cut their capital budgets, you are going to see less production. You're going to see, less oil found, and so at some point it does rebound. As discredited as the idea of peak oil is, there is one fundamental truth about it, which is that we're not finding $9 a barrel oil anymore. The new oil that's coming on stream is $40 a barrel, it's $50, it's $60, it's $70, $80 a barrel oil. So, the idea that we're going to stay down at $40 a barrel, we're going to get to $40 a barrel and then stay down there, I think is just wrong. But it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it is going to take a while. So as you go into next year, it's interesting. This weekend, Barron's is out. The top 10 strategists that they interviewed, or they interviewed 10 of the top strategists on Wall Street, every single one was bullish.
I know.
They couldn't find a bear anywhere. What are your thoughts going into next year? Would you be number 11 on that list of strategists of being bullish for next year?
It's hard to be bullish about next year because there's so many moving parts. The idea that we know what the Fed is going to do next year, one of the reasons I think the market is so wacko in last week and this week is you've got, the Fed is meeting, the Fed's Open Market Committee meets on Wednesday, and people are going, are they going to say something that gives us more information about when the first interest rate hike is going to be? The consensus is all over the block. It's either like the first quarter of 2015, extends all the way, and Paul Krugman yesterday or over the weekend said, he doesn't see it in 2015 at all, and he thinks the first rate increase is 2016. That's a really big spread. So if you can tell me what the Fed is going to do next year, I'll tell you whether I'm bullish or bearish.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I was going to ask you what the Fed was going to do because there's a lot of discussion this week. The Open Market Committee regarding the Open Market Committee that they may take the considerable time phrase out. Do you think that they will?
Yeah, well, I think they might modify it. I don't think they're going to take it out, because I think one of the things that, I mean, you know, the Fed may say that it doesn't watch the markets. The Fed does watch the markets. It you know, it's looking at this and going, okay, so the markets are pretty nervous. You've got a world with rampant, not deflation, but sort of a lack of inflation. So the idea that you would raise rates while you've got, you know, a slowing global economy and, you know, inflation in many parts of the developed world below 1%, you know, there's not going to be any rush to do that. The Fed under Bernanke was very, very aware of 1937, and I think they're still determined not to make that mistake, which is that, you know, you don't do anything prematurely that chokes off a recovery and that leaves you, you know, with the same problems but with fewer tools. And I think that's where they are right now.
Now, how do you think we're going to get out of this? I mean, that's a question that hasn't been addressed lately, but we have a tremendous amount of debt. How do you think we will get out of this situation?
I don't think the debt is the issue. I think what we've got is a tremendous lack of growth. You know, if debt is only a problem if you're not growing. So, you know, if the U.S. economy grows at 4% a year with, you know, modest inflation, I think we're okay. You know, the problem is that you've got Europe growing at 1%, Japan growing at 1%. It's hard to, you know, and you've got Brazil growing at 1%, China growing, you know, at, I don't know, 7, whatever the real number is over there. But you've got the only place in the world where you say, might say that growth is anywhere near what it should be or what it could be, is the United States. And that's not, a tenable long-term situation. The U.S. can't, you know, it just isn't a big enough economy to pull the whole world out of a slump.
Yeah, isn't that kind of the problem that's going on now? Is that the rest of the world seems to be slowing down? I mean, it seems to be everywhere. The Eurozone, China, Japan.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at a debt problem, I mean, the real debt problem is in China. And that's the one that worries me, where, you know, you've had tremendous debt built up in projects and invested in things that aren't producing any return. I mean, if it's one thing to laugh and say, oh, okay, so they built 70 cities that are empty, but that's 70 cities worth of capital that now is not earning any return. And, you know, you look at the way that works out through the system, you've got, you know, debt here, debt there, because that stuff isn't earning any return. So the Chinese right now are having to cope with the fact that they've got massive debt on not so much the major banks, but on the, not on the books. It should be on the books of the local governments, because they're the ones who did this. But it's not, of course, because it's on some kind of shadow entity. But, you know, the Chinese are trying to work that out and make a lot of economic transitions to a consumer economy. And therefore, you know, the idea of 10% growth in China is gone.
It is gone. I mean, where it's 7 to 7.5 is pretty good, though, right?
Well, it is if it's real. You know, the thing is that you're getting 7.5% GDP growth, but you're getting something like 2% growth in electricity production and falling production of steel. So it's hard to put these things together and say that the GDP number is real, and I don't think it is.
Well, I tell you what, if you can hang on, Jim, what I'd like to talk
sure
about
can.
When we come back is where you do see opportunities. So, folks, stay with us. We've got Jim Jubak with us, editor and founder of JubakFix.com. We'll be back to you in just a few moments.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
If you've ever been to a money show, then you know that the gentleman we're talking to today is—he really is a rock star. He is senior markets editor for themoneyshow.com. He's also editor and founder of JubakPicks.com. That's JubakPicks, JubakPicks.com, and you can go there and connect with Jim Jubak. Jim, we were talking before the break about what's going on around the world and how we're the prettiest girl to dance. It's an ugly dance, but we're the prettiest girl to dance. I guess I should ask you first, though. I do want to get some ideas of where, what you do like and what you don't like here in the United States. But I want to ask you about emerging markets. Are they really going to be in trouble because of everything that's going on out there?
I think that you've got the strong dollar, which is what we're seeing, is a real problem for the emerging markets. So, because you know you've had this huge boom in emerging market debt. I don't mean national debt, but corporate debt, and most of that borrowing was done in dollars. And you're seeing company after company suddenly looking around and going, "Oh, okay, so we've got to pay back that debt in dollars, and our interest payments are in dollars, and those dollars are 10% more expensive than they were a year ago." And that's a big problem. And if you're doing that, and plus you're running a commodity-based economy as you are in say Brazil, you're looking at a double hit.
Okay, so stay away from...
So long term, yeah, emerging markets are still great stories, but short term, don't see it as a place to be over the next year.
Okay, all right. So where would you go? I mean, would you? I guess I think would you buy all stocks down here?
I think you go with what you've got, which is that oil stocks. I think are in many cases oversold because you're. The fear right now is that we're looking at a global slowdown, and we're not seeing growth falling. We're simply, which is what the market, I think, is worried about. We're simply seeing growth not be very strong. So that doesn't mean a collapse of demand. But the real worry is that you've got a lot of financially overextended oil companies, either and the market is not making much discrimination between a company that really is overly indebted, unable to pay its debt, with negative cash flow, like some of the smaller oil shale companies in the U.S. And a company like Exxon, where they're actually making more money as oil prices go down in their refining business. So I'm not sure that I'd be looking to buy oil right now, but I certainly wouldn't be giving in to the sense of panic that all oil stocks should be sold right now.
Okay, good. Yeah, neither do I. What areas do you like? Where do you think there's real opportunity out there?
Well, I mean, I think what you're getting is lower oil prices, so I think you ought to go with that. So that one of the sectors I've recommended has been transportations in the U.S. Strong U.S. economy, strong retail sales, lower fuel prices for airlines. So the airlines have been really, really strong. Those, I think, are places where you're getting the benefit of lower oil prices. Lower oil prices are also pretty good for refiners.
What concerns you out there as you look forward in the marketplaces? What could be the event that could really cause us? We haven't had a real significant pullback in quite some time. I guess last week was the roughest week in a long time. Is there anything out there that you're really, really concerned about?
Well, I mean, the place for volatility right now that's worrisome is actually in the debt markets. I mean, on October 15th, we had this really strange event in the Treasuries market where, we had a move in Treasuries, and Treasuries don't move like stocks, but it was an immense move. Statistically, it was a move that should have only every 1.6 billion years. And looking
wow.
at it, you go... it was probably because we had liquidity dried up in the Treasury market, and that's just extraordinary. So there's clearly weird stuff going on in the debt market. We've got energy stocks are about 16%, 17% of the junk bond market. So that's a worry. You've had a lot of people looking for yield on the assumption that there's not much volatility in the debt market. I think that's going to turn out to be wrong. So that, rather than the stock market, is where I'd be looking for a sort of a trigger, a causal problem, especially because, if you're looking at the Fed talking about raising rates, this keeps people nervous. On the other hand, betting that rates were going to go up has been a loser's bet
right.
For the last year. So I don't know, so there's a lot of volatility in that market, and I think that's what I'd be watching.
Yeah, it amazed me. Last year, about this time, actually in January, we tried to bring on those folks that make their living predicting interest rates. And I only had one person, that was Dr. Lacey Hunt from Hoisington in Austin, Texas, actually say that interest rates are going down. Every other person that we interviewed said it was going to go up, and sure enough.
You know, you can make a strong argument for 2015 that rates are going to go down because there's just simply more demand for treasuries globally because they're safe than there is supply.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't think we can guarantee that rates are going to go up in 2015, even if the Fed does start to raise rates. So it's going to make 2015 really, really tough to predict.
Going to be an interesting year. Thank you so much, Jim.
Unfortunately,
I hope you and your family have a happy holiday, sir. Thank you.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.